Welcome to Everyday Martial Artist, a weekly podcast where you'll join me, Brian Doucette, as I interview a different martial artist each episode and hear their story. Some guests you may have heard of, and some you probably haven't. Be sure to subscribe where all your favorite podcasts are available. Also, visit our website at everydaymartialartist.com. If you're listening for a specific interview, I sure hope you'll stay and check out the other episodes. A very special thank you to Topher Williams for our custom theme music. And now, the newest episode of Everyday Martial Artist. Everyday Martial Artist is brought to you by KOOnline.com for all your martial arts needs. Sparring and safety gear, rank belts, uniforms, weapons, patches, and more. Wholesale supplies made by martial artists for martial artists. Visit us today at KO-Online.com. Hello and welcome to Everyday Martial Artist. I'm your host, Brian Doucette, and as we do every week, we're joined by a brand new guest talking about their life and their journey throughout the world of martial arts and everything else in between. My guest today is a martial artist, athlete, actor, motivational speaker, coach, author, and so much more. He started his competitive career at age 3 in swimming. In swimming, golf, martial arts, he achieved state, regional, national, international, and world championship status. As a martial artist, he's trained with some of the best in the world, like Billy Blanks, Wally J, and Pat Johnson, just to name a few. As an author, his current books are Positive Thinking is for Sissies and The Best You Can Sucks, with a brand new book coming soon. As an actor, he's best known for his role in my all-time favorite martial arts movie, The Karate Kid, and for bringing that same character to the small screen in the global smash hit Cobra Kai. Please welcome my guest today, Sensei Ron Thomas. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing good. I truly appreciate your time. I know how pressed people are for time, so anytime they're willing to do this, I truly appreciate it, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, me as well. I'm always excited to talk about Karate Kid, Cobra Kai, Pastor Bobby stuff, and nice. Martial arts, and anything else that I've got going on.
Cool. Kind of how we start things off on the show, I want to go back to the very beginning. I want to know where that first spark came from, that first interest that kicked off your martial arts journey.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in my brand new book, I actually lay this out in the introduction of my new book.
Awesome.
And I've spoken about this on the stage as well, but I put it in my new book, which for all of your fans, I'm sure will appreciate the title, The Hidden Life Lessons of Mr. Miyagi.
Nice.
It's coming this year. It'll be on the shelves probably toward the end of the year, but I will have it available for pre-sale and even before it hits the shelves. So
awesome. You know,
anybody who wants to follow me can follow me at The Real Ron Thomas on Instagram, Sensei Ron Thomas on Facebook. My website is senseironthomas.com. And anybody's interested in grabbing that book ahead of time, I'm sure I will be doing a launch with signings.
Very cool.
Stuff like that. But anyway, and you can get autographs from my website and everything else, 8x10s from Karate Kid, Cobra Kai.
Cool.
Okay, that plug being said.
Awesome.
In the introduction to my book, I talk about being in high school when I was weighing in my freshman year in high school. I was 4 foot, just under 5 feet, like 4'11" or something like that. Wow. And I can totally remember getting my locker assignment. You know, you go through your freshman orientation, you meet the coaches and the PE room, and you go find your locker. And you had two lockers. You have one downstairs in the PE, and then upstairs, you know, you go find your school locker. And I can remember being weighed in for physical education. Okay. The guy weighing me in was the junior varsity football coach. And I'm barely scratching 100 pounds, barely scratching less than 5 feet, you know, soaking wet. And he looks at me, he gets me on the scale, and he looks at me and he says, "Go home and eat, son." So go eat some food and get some growth going, you know? And so that day I get my locker assignment, and this is a pretty big high school, Reno, Nevada, Reno High School. It's a pretty big high school. Back then it was the high school. And I'm walking down these long hallways and looking for my locker. And I'm looking down at my hand, at the paper with my locker number. I'm looking back up at the lockers and I'm trying to find my locker. And I hear, but it was kind of the end of the day and most of the students have gone. And I hear some laughter coming from down the hall. And these guys there's four guys coming, and they might as well have been Johnny, Bobby, Dutch, and Tom.
Wow. Right?
And I was playing the role of Daniel's son in this particular scenario. And these guys are walking toward me. And this guy, Dutch, I'll call him Dutch, gives me the Dutch look, you know, as he's. And I'm like, oh, this can't be good. So I'm walking by them and they're walking the opposite way. And as they walk, starting to walk by me, Dutch breaks away from the other three and punches me in the face.
Wow.
Hard.
Wow.
Now, there's nothing I can do. There's four against one. Nobody's around. I'm, like I told you, I wasn't the biggest dude back then. And I'm just like, watching these guys walk, and then he, you know, they just keep walking as if nothing happened, and they're laughing amongst themselves. And that's when I realized, if I'm going to survive high school, I'm going to need an equalizer, you know. And my friend was taking martial arts, he was taking Japanese jiu-jitsu. And now that I'm telling the story, the synchronicity of it all these years later, it was in a church.
Oh, wow, that's funny.
And I say the synchronicity because, you know, Bobby has evolved to be Pastor Bobby.
Yeah.
And so I started my martial arts journey in the Unity Church in Reno, Nevada. No mats, taking falls on hard floors, carpeted floors, you know, because jiu-jitsu is a throwing art.
Mm-hmm.
That's the spark. That's where it all started. And I fell in love with the martial arts and everything my sensei would say about personal development. It was kind of the spark to... not initially, but it was a second spark to mindset and personal development stuff through my sensei. So the two kind of joined in that instance. And, you know, I've been, martial arts has taken me around the world.
Yeah. So think back to maybe the first one or two classes. Once you got there, what was it about it? And you said you fell in love with it, but what was it? What stands out that made you say, hey, I don't mind getting thrown around on hardwood floors. I want to do this.
The mystique. You know, the mystery of martial arts and how a smaller opponent can defeat a larger opponent, and the way my sensei would deliver the information. Professor Larry Carey was my sensei, and he had a way of not just knowing techniques, but really understanding what makes them work and being able to teach that to his students. And also beyond that, like I said, he would spend sometimes, I don't know, class would be over, we'd already be bowed out, and he would just keep talking. And he would talk about life, and he would talk about mindset, and he would talk about character development, and he would talk about how to create your life and focus on the things you want, not on what you don't want. And these types of things I'd never really heard before in the way that he was delivering. He was kind of like my real life Mr. Miyagi.
Nice.
You know, that's what really grabbed me, I think.
Okay. And yeah. Now I know you got involved in the competition side of martial arts. Kind of what drew you into that? I know, I mean, I mentioned in the intro, you were an athlete already. So is that pretty much just in you?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned in the intro, I was named the youngest competitive swimmer in the world at 3 years old. And I don't know if that was true, but I just remember hearing, standing on the starting block of my first race, little Ronnie Thomas, the youngest competitive swimmer in the world, you know, in lane six or whatever lane I was in, coming through the loudspeaker. But yeah, the you know, and then I just kept swimming and training. I was training for the, hopefully training for the Olympics, but I told you my size when I became a freshman year. Right. At some point, all these swimmers that I was beating in the water started growing. And, you know, the taller swimmers or the faster swimmers, they're just pulling more water.
Yep.
You know, Michael Phelps is what, I don't know, 6'4" or whatever he is, but his wingspan's like 6'7" or something.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's like
14 foot. So he's wearing flippers. You know, I can't, at some point physically couldn't compete with those types of swimmers anymore. But anyway, yeah, the competitive spirit really started from the age of three.
Do you remember your first martial arts tournament?
No, that's a good question. I would have to think back. I don't remember my first martial arts tournament. Because it was Japanese jiu-jitsu. It wasn't Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
It was all around. So we do punches and kicks and throws and takedowns and chokes and arm bars and ground fighting and all of that stuff. And sometimes we would compete in karate tournament, like point fighting.
Oh, wow.
Point karate. Okay. And we would go and we would compete in judo. My sensei was a champion judo player back in the day, but jiu-jitsu was his forte. But judo came from jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
So we would do judo, we would do point fighting, point martial arts, you know, and at some point it evolved into sport jiu-jitsu, which is kind of a combination of all of that. They were at one time trying to make sport jiu-jitsu a Olympic sport.
Yeah.
So they were, hands and feet were padded, you could strike, but we were trying to keep the contact light because to make it an Olympic sport, it had to be a safe sport.
Right.
Not like MMA or something like that. So it just, for whatever reason, they couldn't get it through the Olympic committee.
Yeah.
But that ended up being where I trained with the U.S. Jiu-Jitsu team. My sensei became a coach for the U.S. Jiu-Jitsu team. I was a trainer. A lot of my students became national and world champions. Yeah. So that was kind of the evolution.
So how long did you stay at that specific school?
My sensei school or mine?
Your sensei school.
My sensei school, I trained with until I moved to Los Angeles to pursue my acting career.
Okay.
So I trained with my sensei from about the time of 14, 15 years old till, you know, I moved to LA, which was around 20 years old.
Okay.
To make a permanent move. I was traveling back and forth to Los Angeles on auditions and stuff like that. But yeah, I made the permanent move around 20.
Okay. And the one question I love asking people, because it intrigued me, is what led you to the teaching side of martial arts? Because that's one thing I know just from my background, it's not for everybody. You know, just because you have a black belt doesn't mean you're a good teacher and so forth. So what kind of led you to that part of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, my sensei was a total inspiration, especially he was very good martial artist, but he was a very good teacher as well. And I saw what it was doing for people. I've always just kind of loved it and loved what it did for me. And I was working as an actor in Los Angeles. And initially, when I moved, I was doing the Conan the Barbarian show at Universal Studios, okay, which was a great gig for actors. And it was, you know, a lot of my martial arts training was one of the reasons why I got that role as young Conan. And I played actually two roles, young Conan and as an actor. And then I come somewhere at midpoint of the show, I turn into big Conan, you know, the guy, the muscle guy, mm-hmm, and I go backstage and the big guy comes out. And I have a costume change. I come back out as Balash. And Balash was a martial artist who used a Kwon Do on stage, mm-hmm, to fight Conan against his sword. So I played two roles in the show. And it was a great gig as an actor because it was a steady gig, steady money, performing every day, staying in shape. It was a killer show. I was like a corporate athlete. And then I could go on auditions because we had understudies. So if I had an audition or I got a role outside of Universal Studios, that's where the show was, Universal, mm-hmm, Studios Hollywood, you know, I could go on an audition, I could get a role, and I got Karate Kid, actually. And I had to leave the Conan show for months to do Karate Kid, and then it came back. So where was I going with that?
What led you to teaching?
Yeah, so what led me to teaching was that show. I did that show for years and years. And I also did the Miami Vice Action Spectacular. I played Sonny Crockett.
Nice.
Up in the stunt show at Universal Studios Hollywood. And those shows, when they closed down, I was unemployed. So at some point, you know, I was teaching in my garage at my home, mm-hmm, handful of students who were interested in learning. Some of them were in the show. And then when the shows closed down, I was unemployed. So I opened up my first martial arts school. And so had a couple of them in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Think back to maybe the first time you remember teaching, whether it's in your garage or assisting your instructor, to now. What do you think has changed the most about your teaching style over all these years?
I don't know if anything has changed about my teaching style. It depends on what you're referring to, right? So just, I like to have fun when I teach. And I also like to be very safe because a lot of this stuff is dangerous. I mean, you know, throws, for example, were first designed to throw, and they were practiced on prisoners back in feudal Japan, right? So they take prisoners, and they would try to drive them on their head. The throws are not meant to land on your back.
Right.
Throws are meant to put a person on their head on the concrete. You turn them over on their back so you can practice and come back the next day and train again. And arm bars, they're meant to break the arm. Mm-hmm. That's what they are. You know, so it's a dangerous thing and people don't understand the safety aspects. They get carried away. One of the things that I think I don't know how it trained out of me or whatever, but is the arrogance of a lot of martial artists thinking that their system is the best system, the only system. It has to be because I spent all these years training in it and I've paid all this money. And so my system is the best.
Right.
And that sort of cockiness and arrogance not only can get you in trouble because, you know, but also it's just uncalled for. Martial arts, the spirit of the family, the ohana of martial arts, the open-mindedness of, hey, I can learn, you know, I'm a karate guy, but I can certainly learn some Aikido. I'm an Aikido guy, but I can certainly learn some Taekwondo and some Jiu-Jitsu and all of it is good.
Right.
if practiced and trained with the right attitude. And so it's, I think somewhere in there is just a little bit different way of approaching teaching to keep a student's mind open to what's really real. You know, my sensei used to say, there's a lot of martial artists out there that are very, very good at their art form. They don't have a black belt. They don't give them belts, but they practice their art every Friday and Saturday night. Go try to kick them in the balls.
Yeah.
They've been kicked there before. You're not going to hurt them or surprise them. These guys are street fighters. They know street psychology. They know the art of ambush. They know the art, you know, so their mentality is different and they're good at their art. So don't get so cocky that just because you think you train in the martial arts, you may know just enough to get yourself put in the hospital or worse. You know, there's always somebody better. There's always somebody who knows more. There's always somebody bigger, stronger. I told a story to my student. I'll never forget. I was telling the story the other day to somebody who talked about jujitsu and why a person should train in jujitsu versus karate or something like that. And I'm like, oh, you should train. You should learn it all. But here's the thing. And I told the story to my students. I'll just tell you the story real fast.
Okay.
If a person studies Brazilian jujitsu and that's what they know, and they think that, you know, they used to always say, well, every fight's going to end up on the ground. Is that true?
No.
Every fight? Every single fight that ever happens in the world is going to end up on the ground. Okay. That's an interesting perspective. It's not my perspective. It's not my truth, right. But it might be true for you. Okay. But let's analyze that for a second. Let's assume that, okay, so I'm just going to train for the ground only. All right. But what happens in the street when you're beating this guy on the ground who attacks you or whatever, and you're winning, and he's got a friend in the crowd who's going to come out and bust a bottle over your head because you're beating up his friend? Oh, wait a minute. We're not talking about multiple attackers, are we? Yeah, we are. Because there's always a multiple attacker. There's always a good Samaritan. There's always a friend in the crowd. There's always a cell phone with a camera on. Yep. We're in a litigious society. So you can bust a person's nose wide open. You're probably going to end up going to court. So I told that story. And then about 2 weeks later, there was a fight up in Mammoth. And the guy was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. And I'm not knocking Brazilian jiu-jitsu, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling a story. Mm-hmm. There was a guy up in Mammoth at the ski village. You know, there was a fight at night. The skiers were out drinking or whatever. And guy was rolling around on the ground and beating the guy with his skills as a Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But the guy had a friend. And the friend came out from the crowd and knifed this guy in the back and killed him.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
And that was, you know, years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But I had just told the story like a few weeks prior to my students about street psychology and the psychology of fighting and the psychology of the street. So anyway, this openness, I think, is kind of evolved in me, the way I approach teaching. And I work on the mind. And being a personal development and mindset guy, I really try to work on the mind as much as the technique and the physicality of martial arts.
I love that. That's a great outlook on it.
Yeah.
And obviously my listeners will freak if I don't talk about Karate Kid, because I've probably mentioned it on every episode, because as I said in the intro, it is my all-time favorite movie. It actually launched my martial arts career. Literally 10 years old, June of 1984, me and my friends went opening night. And as we're walking out of the theater in the small town of Little Falls, Minnesota, population 7,000, the local Tung Soo Do school is handing out free passes as we walk out the door for a month of free lessons. That's how my martial arts career started. So it's that. Yeah. So that movie's always had an impact. I literally watch it at least once a year, at least. Yeah. Never get sick of it. So just talk a little bit about it. You mentioned you had to leave your other job to go do Karate Kid. Kind of what led to that, and what are, you know, maybe a couple memories from that? And also, if I heard correctly, were you like one of the only kind of main characters that actually had martial arts training in the cast?
Yes, totally. Okay,
cool. I thought so.
You know, your story about you starting the martial arts is not the first time I've heard that.
Right.
People say the Karate Kid changed my life. I've heard that a million times from people all over the world, or even Bobby, my character, changed their lives. But what really changed their lives is they got involved in martial arts, started training. Mm-hmm. Martial arts really is the thing that changes lives. And I was in a room of over 400 black belts in Las Vegas one time at a convention. And the question was asked, hey, all of you black belts, if you were to go out tonight and hit $1 million jackpot, if that was possible, how many of you would trade your black belt for $1 million jackpot tonight? Not one hand went up, because you can't put a price tag on what it takes to become a black belt. You can't put a price tag on the blood, the sweat, the tears, the inner transformation and personal development that it takes and the things it does for people. I've seen people get off drugs. I've seen people get out of homelessness, off the streets. I've seen it change so many lives in so many different ways. Yeah. I've seen people who got bullied train in martial arts and they're no longer being bullied. And I've seen bullies stop bullying. Mm-hmm. You know, so martial arts is just a great thing. But yes, I was the only black belt. And it's a funny story. My agent called and said, you have this audition for this new movie coming up called The Karate Kid, but you're going to go in and you're going to meet the casting director, Caro Jones, but don't talk about your martial arts. What? Yeah, don't listen. The guy directing it directed Rocky. He's John Avildsen. He's Academy Award winning director. The guy producing it is Jerry Weintraub. They're known for
Enter the Dragon. Yep.
They're not martial artists. This isn't really a martial arts movie. It's a story, and it's a really good story. And they're going to really look at your acting. They want to know about your acting. Don't talk about it unless they ask you. If they ask you about if you've had any training, tell them. But otherwise, don't bring it up. Just go and focus on the acting thing. And so that's what I did. But it was about 6 or 7 weeks into training when Pat Johnson started to get a little more serious with us. You know, we had 4 or 5 weeks of rehearsal before we started even rolling cameras. And Pat Johnson came up to me one day and he says, you know something, don't you? You had some training before, huh? And I said, yeah. And I confessed to him, you know, but he recognized it, you know, because a black belt moves differently than a white belt.
Yep.
They hold their posture and everything differently. And so he recognized it and called me out. Which was a cool thing, because when it came time for the montage scene in The Karate Kid, where we had all these black belts come in from the Los Angeles area to be extras in the point fighting thing and all these different fights going on, he had to choreograph and work with all these different martial artists. He came to me and he said, okay, I want you to take this guy and this guy. I want you to choreograph a short point fight between you, this guy, and between this guy, and then bring it to me for approval before we roll it. So I got to choreograph my own fight stuff.
That's cool.
In montage. Yeah. When you see me drop down and, you know, actually literally sweep the leg and the guy fall, or I do the flying leg scissors and then do the back fist on the ground in the montage. That was all from Japanese jiu-jitsu.
That is so cool. It was all
in my background. Yeah. It was fun. Yeah, I was doing the Conan show and I got that role, had to quit the Conan show and go focus on The Karate Kid. And unfortunately, I had a manager at the time who told me, you're going to laugh. He's not the only guy that told me this, but he said, this movie is not going to go anywhere. It doesn't have a demographic. It doesn't have an audience, but you know, I'm glad you're working, but it's not going to go anywhere. And then I went home to do a hometown, you know, hometown boy makes good in Hollywood type of interview with a movie reviewer for the new local news in Reno. And after the interview, he told me the same thing. You know, this movie's not going to go anywhere.
Wow.
But not demographic. So don't listen to freaking people, because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And don't take their opinion to heart, because people are wrong all the time.
Oh yeah.
So
in the original script, was Bobby always the nice one out of the bullies? Was that kind of always the case, or did that change?
Yeah, no, Bobby, that was kind of written into the script.
Okay.
You know, and Bobby was, he was torn. You know, he wanted to be with his boys, the Cobra Kai, and do what they're doing. But, you know, he knew when the line had to be drawn, and he wasn't afraid to draw it. You know, and that's what I really love about Bobby. And I think, it, you know, as he's matured and now he's Pastor Bobby, he definitely knows where the line is.
Yeah.
Not afraid to sweep Johnny in church. Comes in.
That's awesome.
But you know, like on the soccer field as an example, when Johnny says, yeah, take him out. Bobby didn't really have a problem with that. It's not going to hurt him. Just trip him, you know, take him down on the soccer field. There's a funny story there. But
yeah.
So Bobby was willing to do that kind of stuff. But the fence fight where he's 5-on-1 and he's just getting pummeled, that Bobby knew this guy's had enough. And if we take this too far, he's going to get hurt really bad. And that's not cool. So anyway, yeah, but that was always written. And it aligns with who I am as a person. You know, I never want to hurt anybody if I don't have to.
I was going to say, just as a lifelong martial artist, that obviously that character must have really connected with you. So that's cool that you got to play that character.
Yeah, he totally aligns with who I am. Yeah, for sure.
So what was the funny story on the soccer field?
Oh, so Ralph, we're doing it. And Ralph gets on top of me. He's supposed to throw this punch. And he actually hit me. He hit me with his forearm in the lip. And he bloodied my lip. And he is like, oh, and then, you know, we kept going. He knew he hit me and he hit me pretty hard with, you know, the fist goes by my face, but he still clipped me with his forearm. And then he afterwards came up to me, man, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Are you okay? I'm kind of smiling because I'm like, dude, I've been hit harder than that for sure. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. I got to interview Sensei Fumio Demura about a year and a half ago before he passed. And he told the story about the fence fight and when his pants split. And that's why I love those stories like that. I was laughing so hard at that one. He's a hilarious guy. So,
right.
How much did you get with him being Pat Morita's stunt double? Did you get to work with him quite a bit? And did you know who he was as a martial artist?
Yeah. Oh, I knew who he was and knew who he was inside the Hollywood arena, you know, and I didn't get to work with him too much on The Karate Kid. I just got to know him, you know, and then in the recent years, I've got to hang out with him a lot, doing some martial arts events and some Comic-Con autograph signings and stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, the martial arts world has lost a legend when he passed away.
Yeah.
But he's in a better place.
Same with Pat. I mean, two legends that close together.
Yeah. Pat was a good friend, called me in for some other stuff when he was doing some stunt coordinating and came to my house, you know, for my birthday party and stuff like that. But I got to know Pat really well. He didn't live too far away from me when we were living in Los Angeles. So yeah,
that's cool.
I've been lucky. I mean, Billy Blanks, I've been lucky to meet and work with lots of legends in this field.
Yeah. You know? That's really cool. So I'm curious, you know, obviously Cobra Kai, I want to know, like, you know, they talked about like a reboot and sequels and all these crazy things over the years. When you initially heard the idea about Cobra Kai, what were your initial thoughts? Before you read a script or anything, when you just heard, hey, this is what they're doing, what were your initial thoughts?
Zapka, we're good friends. Why didn't you tell me? Because I initially heard it from Billy, you know, but he had kept it secret for so long. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable.
Yeah.
Anyway, because he had obviously known what they were up to for a while before he spilled the beans. And you know, I have a phone call with Billy. But, you know, I think I had the same thoughts a lot of people did. Like, it's a risk, but you don't get anywhere if you don't take risks in life. You know, this could go either way. This could go really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could go really well. And the producers, you know, Josh Heald and John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg, they told me when I spoke to them initially that they do not, under any circumstances, when they launched this thing, they did not want to be the guys that screwed up the Karate Kid brand.
Right.
You know, so they did everything possible to try to make this thing work. And it did, you know, it had a built-in fan base globally, which was genius on their part. It wasn't like launching a new brand. Everybody knew Karate Kid. And so that was smart. And then they brought in all these, a younger fan base with bringing in newer faces and younger faces, you know? And so it's just been a genius way of continuing the legacy. And, you know, they've hired some really world-class talent. And what can I say?
I honestly think if it wasn't for the success of Cobra Kai, we probably wouldn't have seen Top Gun Maverick. They proved they could do something 30 years later and make it a massive success.
Yeah, it's such a, it's almost surreal. You know, it's almost like to be even a part of it, to think, wow, this journey has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And to be, I mean, the Karate Kid franchise and brand is totally unique in Hollywood. It stands out on its own from any other movie, I think. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
It's got a fan base that's awesome. And it's, like I said, like we said already, it's the movies sparked people to go train the martial arts. It's promoted the martial arts industry in a huge way. It's changed lives. And it has a streaming series on Netflix that is the number one series in the world on Netflix when it's going, you know, when it's showing. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you cannot argue with that stuff. It was the number one searched show on Google when it first came out. And so, you know, what other movie has done what The Karate Kid has done?
Yeah.
If you just follow it, you know, tracing it till from the beginning point to now, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think I've rewatched the whole series at least 7 times. So. Right. I love it. I watch it with my daughter. I watch it just random. Yeah. I literally just finished the last season yesterday again, getting ready for the new season this year. So
yeah, it's awesome.
That's really cool. So kind of a little shift here, but what kind of led you down the path of being a motivational speaker? Kind of where did that come from?
It's kind of evolution from that 3-year-old kid on the starting block of my first swimming race to getting involved in competitive golf, which is you can't be a good golfer if you don't have a good mindset to go mm-hmm. with it. Focus and visualization and that kind of stuff. And I was a competitive snow skier in high school. And, you know, I've dabbled in lots of different sports, Pop Warner football, and I just love sports and athletics, you know?
Yeah.
So it's been this evolution. Martial arts certainly took it to another level. And then I found out at some point that Tiger Woods uses a sports hypnotherapist, and he was involved in sports hypnotherapy. And he was turned on to that by Michael Jordan, who used hypnosis throughout his whole career. Mm-hmm. So I went and got certified in hypnosis.
Oh, wow.
And clinical hypnotherapy. And then alongside of that, neuro-linguistic programming, which if you know anything about Tony Robbins, mm-hmm. that's his entire background. And Tony Robbins, you know, is arguably one of the best change facilitators in the world.
Yeah.
And mentally, you know, just so I get going through that training and looking at what we do as human beings on an unconscious level and how much the unconscious mind has control and power over us. And we don't even know it. It's really about 88% of our mental power. Only about 12% is conscious. So for instance, when a person wants to lose weight, they say, I'm going to lose weight. I want to finally get fit and in shape. But what happens when the chocolate cake shows up?
Yep.
The conscious mind and the subconscious mind have a debate. And the 88% subconscious usually wins the fight. So we have to change ourselves if we want change, permanent change, really at a subconscious level, or we have to we have to actually work with just our conscious way of being and thinking and doing in the world, but also our subconscious. And the subconscious mind is extremely powerful. I've seen some incredible things, you know, using just hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming and everything. So that all was an evolution, right? Okay. So I've already a martial artist. I was always ran the dojos. I was already a world champion. I was already training other world champions. And then I got involved in that and what Tony Robbins does. And then I'm like, there is a lot of people out there in the world that don't want to go into a dojo and learn how to fight. Mm-hmm. They like their nose right where it is. They in the center of their face. They're afraid of fighting. They're not even interested, but they are interested in the life skills that martial arts teaches. They are interested in the esoteric principles and almost sometimes spiritual principles that the martial arts teaches, mind, body, spirit. And where else can you go to get that? You know, if I don't want to go into the dojo and I don't want to learn how to fight, but I do want that other stuff. Well, that's what I bring to the stage. You know, that's what I bring to a motivational talk. That's what I write in the book about the hidden life lessons of Mr. Miyagi, is some of those principles, some of those life skills and ways of the hidden life lessons of Mr. Miyagi is really a book about mastery and self-mastery. Because I've got it like this. We can have three things. We can have misery, we can have mediocrity, or we can have mastery. You choose. If you want mastery, you just want to be mediocre and average, good on you. Go do that. I say the world needs more masterful people operating at a masterful level. Look at the world we're freaking living in. It's chaotic. It's scary on many different levels. I have a high school. You know, I have a 10-year-old daughter now. She just turned 10.
Okay.
And I am very concerned about her future and the world we are leaving her generation. We adults who act like freaking children. Yeah. And it pisses me off. Mm-hmm. Grow up. You want to be mediocre in your life? Fine. But I say that the world is calling on you to be masterful. You have something to give. The world is calling on all of us to be, to lean into mastery. I'm not saying I'm a master. I'm not saying any of us reach the level of mastership that is potentially possible, but we should lean in that way. We should walk in that direction and check ourselves before we wreck ourselves and everyone else around us. What I was getting at was with my daughter, my wife the other day said, hey, did you see this thing about this high school? And it's literally down the road from where we're living now. I'm living in North County, San Diego now.
Okay.
And down the road in Rancho Bernardo, you can look it up. Rancho Bernardo, I think it might've been Rancho Bernardo High School. A father and a son were arrested. And they were arrested because the son was going to shoot up the school. Somebody reported him. See, if you see something, say something. Yeah. Damn it. I'm so tired of this. I own guns. I'm not against guns. So don't go down that road with me.
Right.
My father was a World War II veteran. He taught me about guns and how to use them. He was a hunter. And I grew up in Reno, Nevada. You know, I learned hunter safety and gun safety when I was 12 years old. Don't go down that road with me. I'm not against guns, but this world's gone crazy.
Yeah.
And this guy, his father was a doomsday prep guy. He was prepping for the doomsday. And the kid was going to go shoot up the school. And it was going to happen on the day, the night before, the cops went in and raided their house because they got a tip from another student, I guess. So they went in, they raided his house, and they found weapons, AR-15s, everything you would expect, and grenade launchers, believe it or not, and bomb-making material and all kinds of stuff inside this guy's house.
Wow.
And the father was 45 years old, and the wife and the other kids were allowed to leave the house before they made their arrest, but they went in and they raided and they found all this stuff. Can you imagine if they didn't? And that student never tipped off? Because the next day was when this kid said he was going to go shoot up the school.
Scary as hell.
That's in my neighborhood. I'm concerned about my daughter. Mm-hmm. And like I said, her generation. And so, you know, and I don't care how many martial arts you know. A grenade launcher pointed at you?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You know? So awareness and mentality and psychology, again, going back to that, is very, very important along with your martial arts training. But I say be more masterful in who you are and how you're showing up in the world, because the world needs you. You got gifts and talents to offer. You're a world-class martial artist. Lean into that. Lean into the mastery that the martial arts can give you mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and take it to the world. I can't tell you how many students I get from way back in the day, find me on Facebook, or they find my email and they message me, hey man, I just want to let you know, you changed my life.
Nice.
I was headed down a bad road and you changed my life. And now I'm helping change others. And so paying forward idea is real. Mm-hmm. Take it to heart. You never know how you're going to affect someone else's life, who it might be, and for how long down the road it's going to continue on.
And on the flip side, you can affect them negatively too. So it's, as you're saying, I mean, it's because I had a John Kreese. I had a John Kreese for an instructor that drove me to hate martial arts with a passion. And luckily I found my current instructor who I've been with now since for 30 years.
Yeah.
It could have went bad.
Yeah. And I think my point to that is not only, you know, if you continue with an instructor like that, would you end up hating martial arts? You end up hating yourself.
Yeah.
Because he beats the shit out of your self-esteem.
Correct.
Don't be that guy. That's not mastery. You know, mm-hmm. That's Mr. Miyagi was masterful.
Yes.
John Kreese, the characters I'm talking about now are not masterful. So again, that's my really message. Like I talked about my intro of my book. At the conclusion of my book, I talk about, if it sounds like I'm trying to start a mastery movement, I am, you know, because I beat on it in the book. This is a book about mastery. And mastery is not for sissies. I wrote a book called Positive Thinking is for Sissies, as you mentioned.
Yep.
And I say that not to say that positive thinking is bad. I just say it's for sissies. Because, you know, if your whole mindset is like, oh, you know, there's a silver lining in every cloud. Oh, when one door closes, another one opens. The positive, you got to actually do something, man.
Yeah.
And if you want real change, positive thinking will not help, you know, it'll not save your divorce. It'll not save you know, if you're in, your mortgage is in default, you know, it might not save you from bankruptcy, but mastery involves you looking in the mirror and making some real and seeing some things about yourself you might not like and making a decision to change. That's mastery. It's not for sissies. It's for warriors.
Nice.
And I know your audience is an audience of warriors. So I hope I'm sparking something in everybody that's listening to this.
I think so. Definitely. So question then about your speaking and your seminars. Do you ever do the ones that are open to the public, or are most of yours where companies hire you to come in and, you know, talk to their employees and stuff?
Well, both, right? Okay. I mean, I've had coaching programs, Life Mastery Code, a wellness program, a one for athletes, mindset for athletes, because a lot of athletes out there can't even afford a sports psychologist.
Right.
But they might be able to afford some of the things that I do to help their mindset. Or a lot of them don't even know or don't even think they should worry about it. But if you're a world-class athlete or want to be, and competitive martial artists included, you ought to think about the mind and your mindset and your psychology. But yes, I've done lots of open public sessions, and I plan on doing more of that, right? For the last several years, I've been really focused on getting this book out, but also raising my daughter. That's not for sissies either, by the way. No. Parenting. But raising my daughter and focus on some other things. But now with this new book, I'm taking that and I'm going to be opening some stuff up to the public, including I have a total plan on getting my online courses recorded and available as an online course in these different areas that I'm talking about. So that people, even if they don't coach with me, like in a group coaching, like on Zoom or something like that, they can certainly go online and purchase some of my stuff and go through courses that I'm going to record with video. So there's that. And another thing I should mention because of your audience is my OG Cobra Live seminar, which is a seminar I've already done a few times in different places around the country and globally even, where I go in and I do some hands-on practical self-defense stuff. And then I give an introduction to stunt fighting, on-camera stunt fighting.
Oh, cool.
And then do a Q&A session with the guys. And some of the things in the stunt fighting we've already done, with the self-defense part of the session. And then a Q&A about Karate Kid, et cetera, some mindset and personal development stuff, kind of open forum, and then sign autographs to all the participants. So if anybody's interested in bringing me to your dojo or putting an event together with multiple dojos or something like that, I have that seminar available for martial artists.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Very cool. Yeah, and I'll put links for all that, everything out there when the show comes out, and promote that as much as I can. I'd love to see you live sometime. That'd be kind of cool to take part in something like that.
Yeah, and it's totally fun. It's hands-on. It's me. I come into your dojo and I participate with the kids and the students and have a great time. And it's a big seminar. I mean, big by in terms of hours, It takes at least a 4-hour seminar, if not a 6.
Okay. So in all your years of martial arts, is there one philosophy you've learned that is at the top of your list?
The philosophy is, there's a few. I mean, there's lots of things that the esoteric principles of martial arts, right? In my training, one of the things that they say that I remember is for a lotus flower to fall is to rise to the surface. And I think the meaning of that is for the lotus flower, when it falls off, it rises up to the surface. When it finally breaks free from all the crap that's held it down, it rises to the surface. The boughs that bear the most hang the lowest. The boughs of the fruit tree that bear the most fruit are hanging the lowest, which is all about, it speaks to a little bit to the arrogance and everything, but being humble.
Right.
You carry a lot of fruit, but that doesn't mean you have to go out and prove it in some way. You prove it through your actions, who you're being, in the world. And so these philosophies, these sort of esoteric principles that are kind of taught in the martial arts are sort of ingrained in my philosophy, which is really just, again, be masterful, develop yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Develop yourself, be the best you can be. Otherwise, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing with your time on the planet? Why are you here? Life is short. Be your best. Now, and it does. Yeah. Is it challenging? Yeah. It takes work. Mediocrity is easy. Misery is easy. You want to be miserable? That's easy. Just go focus on the stuff that makes you miserable. Want to be mediocre? Get by? Go ahead and do that. But that's not in alignment with my philosophy of what I think we all have the potential. That's not reaching our potential. What's our potential? Where that's what we're here to do is reach our potential and serve other people, give, you know, help, be a beneficial presence on the planet. And in doing so, you're being a beneficial presence to yourself and to the people you love. And so that's kind of my philosophy.
I like it a lot. I love your outlook. That's cool. You mentioned being the best. So I got to ask, 40 years later, are you sick of the song "You're the Best" by Joe Esposito, or do you still love it like me?
No, I love it.
Nice. It's one of my ringtones. So.
Yeah, I love it. You know, and when that song, as it swells up in the music, you're seeing Bobby, right? Yeah. Getting ready to fight right there. So yep. Yeah, it's kind of my theme song.
That's awesome.
No, I love it. Yeah. You're the best around.
When I tested for my black belt test, I put it on DVD, and I had my friend videotape my black belt test, and I put that song on the intro. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
It's really cool. All right, I have a few fun questions to wrap up the interview. Now, this one I'm really curious because you've met and trained with so many people over the years. Who, and it doesn't have to be four, who are maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5 names you would put on your personal Mount Rushmore of martial arts?
Professor Don Jacobs.
Nice.
From Trinidad. Okay. If you want to Google him, he inspired me so much. He don't play. Let's put it that way. He's from Trinidad. He's not from America.
Yeah.
And I could tell you lots of different stories, but when he punches, he doesn't really, he pulls it a little bit, but you feel it. And I never forget the first time I saw him, I was in awe because he would line up his students that he brought over from Trinidad. And Wally J brought him over, by the way, Professor Wally J.
Okay.
Who's another one of my Mount Rushmore guys. My sensei would be on there too. Wally J brought Don Jacobs over, and Don Jacobs did a demonstration. First time I saw anybody do a dive roll over 4 guys lined up back to back in a standing position. Wow. And he did a dive roll over them. I'm like, wow, that inspired me. So guess what I started doing? Dive rolls over my students standing up. I actually have a photo of me doing a dive roll over a car.
Wow.
Not a car. The car wasn't moving.
Yeah.
It's standing still, but I do a dive roll over the car. I've done that for demos, and he inspired me with some of the stuff that he used to do, but he was so strong and so fast. I remember him doing a demo and he hit his uki. He hit his student multiple times, sounded almost like a machine gun going off. Just bah, 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 bah. And when he was done, his student was standing there wobbly and bleeding from the mouth. Wow. Again, he don't play. He does not play. And then he said, "Are you okay?" And the student says, "Yes, sir." And so he said, "Go rinse your mouth out." So he walked over the fountain and rinsed his mouth out. And then he turned to the audience. He said, "Listen, I know I'm in America, but I come from Trinidad, and the streets of Trinidad are real. There's, you know, this basically saying it's like the streets of Chicago or yeah. New York over in Trinidad." He said, "It's a tough neighborhood. I don't mess around."
Okay.
So anyway, he inspired me. Don Jacobs, Wally J, of course, used to teach Bruce Lee small circle theory and jujitsu, and just a very impressive guy to be around. He always used to use me as an uke. When he would come into Reno or do demonstrations, or I'd go to, you know, Northern California and work out with Jiu-Jitsu America, which is he ran that organization. I was a member. He would pick me as an uki because he knew I loved to fall. I loved to be thrown around by him. So I loved working with Wally. He was not only one of my teachers, but a friend.
That's cool.
And Toru Tanaka.
Okay.
Toru Tanaka, you know, odd jobs from mm-hmm. James Bond movies and martial artist. And he was just fun to be around. Just a great guy. And my sensei, Professor Larry Carey, Lawrence Carey, who's passed away now.
Okay.
Brilliant. Billy Blanks.
Nice.
I love Billy Blanks. I love training with him. I trained with him in Taekwondo. He's a true warrior.
Yeah.
An incredible fighter and a very tough dude. You know, so I've been lucky. I've been blessed to be Professor Sig Kufaroth.
Okay.
Was another guy that I loved so much. His Eskrima and the Kempo and the Filipino knife fighting and stuff he used to do was impressive. So I've been, like I said, I've been really blessed. Mark Dacascos.
Nice.
Is a very good friend of mine. We did the Conan show together, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Played the same role I did in a different cast. And very impressive martial artist and human being. Don't tell him I said that. But he is. Yeah, you know? So
I'm hoping to get him on the show someday.
Yeah.
Interviewed his former babysitter, Karen Shepherd. So she's going to try to reach out for him for me.
Yep, I know Karen very well.
Nice.
She was also in the Conan show.
Yep.
She played Red Sonja. And actually, I was in her, we worked together every day. She was in my cast.
That's cool.
You know, I could go on and on. Some of the people I've been blessed and lucky enough to work with, train with, get to know on a personal level has been pretty awesome in the martial arts world.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's a heck of a Mount Rushmore already.
Yeah, Willie Cahill, you know, former judo coach and U.S. judo. And so, I mean, the list goes on. It's really hard to pick from that pool I just named.
I used to only ask for one and no one could ever give one. That's why I came up with the Mount Rushmore thing. That's a little easier. And I've had, I think the longest list I've had was 8 or 9. So,
yeah, well, I'm sure I could keep going if I had time to think about it.
No worries.
But I've been, like I said, it's been quite a journey.
All right. How about a favorite martial arts book?
I don't know that I have a martial arts book that would be one of my favorites. There's one by Bruce Lee that I liked, and I can't remember the title.
Tao of Jeet Kune Do?
No.
Okay. That one's picked a lot. So
maybe, but I know I'd have to go look at my bookshelf. You know, and I got to be honest with you, I haven't read a ton of martial arts books.
Okay.
Spiritual books, personal development books, that kind of thing. Those are more piqued my interest. So, yeah.
Okay. You ever read Zen and the Martial Arts by Joe Hyams?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
I highly recommend it. It's a quick read and it's a phenomenal book. It's one of my favorites. So usually people haven't read it. It's one of the first ones I recommend.
One of the books I remember is Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Okay. I've heard of that one.
That's by Dan Millman. Dan Millman is not a martial artist, but Way of the Peaceful Warrior, I think, is a great book. It's a great read. And he was a gymnast.
Okay.
But Dan Millman is... pretty good author. Pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now this one, you might not have an answer for. It's usually 50-50 with my guests. Do you have a favorite martial arts video game?
No.
No?
No. Couldn't even tell you what they are.
All right. No worries. All right. These last few, you can't pick anything you've been involved in. A favorite martial arts TV show?
Kung Fu.
Nice. The original, I'm assuming?
Yeah. David Carradine.
Okay. Cool. How about a favorite martial arts movie?
Karate Kid.
other than Karate Kid.
Karate Kid actually really is not a martial arts movie.
I know.
If you think about it, it's not really a martial arts, like Jackie Chan's type stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know that I've ever, I mean, Enter the Dragon and some of those old gems are really come to my mind right off the bat. I don't know that I've ever really gotten into martial arts movies. I like movies that use martial arts. You know, so yeah, I can't think of, and when they use them skillfully,
right.
What is it? John Wick. What is it?
Yeah. A lot of people have mentioned that one.
And then man, my buddy, Mark Dacascos is in it. Right. Yep. I mean, that kind of stuff where they're using their martial arts, but it's more like it has a different theme behind it. You know, not Hong Kong movies.
Right. I love Mark and Only the Strong. That's one of my favorites from my high school years.
Yeah. Luis Esteban, who wrote that, we wrote a script together, actually.
Oh, cool. Okay, nice. All right, final martial arts related question. This one doesn't have to be a martial arts movie, just any movie you've ever seen. Favorite movie fight scene? Is there just one that stands out?
Well, you know, back to John Wick, that was some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are absolutely horrible.
Yep.
And some of them are reality-based, pretty awesome stuff. So, but I can't think of the titles right now of the movies.
That's fine.
And here's another confession. With raising a daughter who, you know, a lot of the movies I watch now is like, you know, Frozen.
Yep.
You know, when I have time to actually watch a movie, it's rare. I used to go to the movies all the time before I had a daughter. And then it became like, well, she's my priority.
Right. So. I get that. My youngest, I have a 17-year-old. I have two older sons, 25-year-old and a 20-year-old. And my daughter's 17, junior in high school. And lucky with that is now my daughter, who's 17, loves the 80s. So we watch 80s movies together. We watch Cobra Kai together.
That's cool.
So yeah, since you mentioned your daughter again, has your daughter gotten involved in martial arts yet?
Yeah, I had her involved in martial arts for a little bit. I had her involved in, I tried karate down the street at a school because it was convenient. Mm-hmm. I pulled her out within a month because it was a bad school, bad instruction, and the sensei was setting a horrible example of being a role. I said, senseis are role models, you know?
Yeah.
She was setting a horrible example. I pulled her out after a month. And so then I got her involved in a jiu-jitsu school.
Okay.
And she was doing it for a while, doing very well. She's quite the athlete, but her passion is gymnastics.
Nice.
And she is unbelievably good at gymnastics, unbelievably good at soccer.
Wow.
And of course, I've had her in the swimming pool on the swim team. She can swim all four strokes. You know, she's done some competitive races in swimming as well.
That's awesome.
If for nothing else, I just never want her to drown.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very true. Yeah. So yeah, her thing is gymnastics and soccer too. She made the all-star team this year. She's really a badass.
That's see, only out of my three kids, only one went the athlete way. My middle son was a runner. He did cross country. He did Nordic skiing. He did track. But they all did martial arts. But all their passion is theater. My son's actually going to school for acting right now. So
that's great. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. So hopefully, who knows? Maybe he'll do a show with you sometime. That'd be kind of cool. Right.
That'd be awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Before I let you go, anything that maybe I forgot to ask you that we haven't got out there that you want to, and like I said, I'll put links for everything, for your website, for your books, and I'll definitely be watching for that new book to come out. But any last minute things you want to throw out there quick?
No, I think we covered it. You know, just follow. I would say, you know, if you're interested in anything I said today, the book, the Cobra Kai Live seminar, even if you're an event planner and you're looking for somebody to come and do a motivational speech, whatever it is, I don't know. Or even a personal development seminar, which mm-hmm. has, you know, which is a little bit different than the martial arts thing. You know, these things I'm available for. I would say follow me, message me, email me. I'm not hard to find. You can find my email on my website, senseironthomas.com. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook, where I do most of my posting on social media. And you'll know, you'll be in the know. You know, when my book's available, you'll be in the know. And you can, I do a No Mercy Monday, by the way. Every Monday on nice. Instagram, okay. I do a thing called No Mercy Monday, where I post a motivational quote from me. I don't post them from other people. I mm-hmm. post my own thoughts and my own quotes about something. And a lot of fans and a lot of people who follow me are appreciative of that, because invariably I'm going to say something in those posts that someone's going through and they needed to hear it. I can't tell you. Almost every time I post something, I get at least two or three people saying, I really needed to hear that today.
That's awesome.
So, you know, follow me. I'm putting positive stuff out there. And like I said, trying to do my best to lean into mastery and be a beneficial presence on the planet to other people and to myself. So, you know, when I say that to myself too, you know, it's like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Right.
But it's also true that, you know, when the teacher is ready, the student will appear. True. And sometimes the student is inside yourself. So a lot of times I'm just... A lot of my posts are me talking to myself, you know, sometimes, and just reminding people. I'm just letting other people in on the conversation. So, and they appreciate it because we're all human, right? We're all go through the same struggles, the same challenges, whether we want to admit it or not.
Right.
It's true.
I think what you're doing is amazing, and I love it. I'll continue to follow you and promote it whenever any way I can do to help. But I think people are going to love this episode, and I so appreciate your time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you giving me a platform to talk a little bit about my life and my journey and what I'm doing now.
Cool. Well, as soon as the episode comes out, I will be in touch, and I'm excited.
Sounds good. Me too.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist. We hope you will join us every week for a brand new episode with a different martial artist telling their story. If you enjoy the show, be sure to leave us a review. Also, be sure to check out our website at everydaymartialartist.com. There you can find all of our episodes and contact us to suggest guests and ask questions. Again, thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist, and we'll see you next week.